You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
After 42 years at WBBM, political editor Craig Delamore is calling it a career. He is known on the air and behind the scenes for his calm presence and impeccable integrity. For decades, he has asked the questions on this program. Today, he has all the answers. Hello, I'm Rob Hart, turning the tables on political editor Craig Delamore on At Issue.
This is our opportunity now, Craig Delamore, to turn the tables on you, to get to the bottom of your sordid competence. 42 years at WBBM. And before we talk about your tenure at the radio station, let's talk about your origin story. And over the course of doing interviews for the radio station's 100th anniversary with current and former staffers, one thing I have discovered is that people who wind up here either start out because they fall in love with radio, or they fall in love with journalism. And where do you fall on that divide?
I fell in love with journalism. I was actually drawn into it because, don't forget, I grew up in the 60s. And so there were efforts by local newspapers and radio stations and such after there were riots, frankly, that maybe they needed to get some variety in the voices that were in their pages and on the air. And I was recruited for a New York Times journalism workshop that took high school students and put editors and reporters in front of them on Saturdays to learn the basics of journalism. And so that was how I and my best friend at the time, and still is my best friend, that we ended up spending our Saturdays not playing games and things, but getting on the New York subways and going into the Columbia School of Journalism, which is where they based this, and talking to then reporter Charlene Hunter Gault and an editor named Rufus Rivers, who taught us journalism. And that's what started me off.
And then out of Columbia University, did you go to WCBS, or was there a stop on the way?
Well, the stop was that Columbia had a summer program for adult journalists, and somebody who saw the kids studying there and learning on Saturday said, "Do you want a summer job?" And so I had a summer job for a few years, working for a program for adult journalists. And then I went to college and then journalism school. So it was after that that I went to WCBS radio and tried for a job as an editorial writer and failed miserably at getting that. But somebody at the station apparently got into an argument or a fight or something with one of the editors, And that person was then fired. And someone came to me and said, you actually did very well with the writing. You just weren't good with the editorializing. So would you like to try out to be a writer? And that was it. I became one of the news writers at WCBS.
Now, before we talk about that, I do want to just expound upon going into journalism in the 1960s as someone who's learning the business, also at a time when the practice was changing, because I think everybody thinks about journalism in New York and it's tabloid wars, it's the front page, it's trying to appeal to people's basest instincts with sordid headline writing that continues to a certain extent to this day. And you got to watch a little bit of that evolution. So what was journalism like, the newspapers, the yellow journalism like before the 1960s? And what did people realize that needed to change about it and that you got to see firsthand?
Well, I think what people saw, don't forget, journalism was different at different places. The New York Times saw itself as the old gray lady of the news. So the people who worked there felt that that was the newspaper of record. You had the Daily News, which was the scrappy newspaper. You also had the Long Island News, the Post. So it was a varied market. But I think what made everyone think twice was, frankly, the civil unrest of the 60s and going forward, because people realized that you didn't have a variety of voices, that they didn't see it coming. And I think that's what it was. People didn't see all of this coming and said, maybe we ought to either train and or hire people who had a different perspective, who knew what was going on. And frankly, that's, to me, when you hear people denigrating diversity, equity, and inclusiveness, it's not necessarily about representation. That is important. People should be able to see other people doing what they might want to do themselves. It's about perspective. And back then, I think people knew that it was having different voices in a newsroom made for different stories that got told, made for arguments about what stories should be told. And that's how we came up. And frankly, both my best friend and I became journalists, he for newspapers and I for broadcast, and we could argue each other's cases for who should, you know, what's better just as easily. But that was how we went.
So New York in the 1960s also gave birth to the all-news radio format, which originally experimental during a newspaper strike. Several stations adopted all-news formats to fill this gap in information that people were not getting from the print media. But then 1010 WIN signs on in 1965, and the late, great 88, WCBS All News 88, signs on a couple of years later. You're there, mm-hmm. and with some big names in the beating heart of CBS at BlackRock, their headquarters, with Jim Donnelly and Lou Adler and Mary Gay Taylor. And
oh, yeah. Lou Adler is the one who hired me. And it was, now don't forget, I'm more toward the late, you know, 70s. I came out of journalism school in 77. We were the bicentennial class of the undergraduates at Columbia. But yes, it was wonderful working with those people. Some of them, Jane Tillman Irving was became a really good friend. She was, I believe, the first African-American reporter at the station. And we became good friends during that time and stayed for many years. So it was great working with those people. Jim Donnelly was great. They are people who became legendary. It is so sad that radio station and the call letters are gone forever.
And that was the beginning of an association with CBS that continued through 2017 before the dissolution of the CBS radio division. And being there in 1977, I mean, even though just to set up the geography in New York, the radio station, CBS AM and FM, were in the headquarters building, Black Rock. Yes. CBS News, Walter Cronkite, they were in the broadcast center on West 57th Street. But you're working for CBS News at, one could argue, at their pinnacle, at the peak of their power, of Walter Cronkite being the most trusted man in America, 60 Minutes turning into an investigative franchise, CBS News being this point of pride for the network, both television and radio, and you're there. And you're this kid from New York. So what was going through your mind as this was unfolding?
Well, at first I was scared to death. Because I was a writer, and I was a writer just out of journalism school. The pace of writing, the quality of writing that was expected at WCBS was phenomenal. They did not hire kids just out of school. So I just happened to luck out and get that job. And frankly, I didn't think I was that good at it. I used to be scared to go home. There was one show that I wrote that for an anchor that I had time to get to my apartment and listen to when it was actually delivered. And I used to wince if I heard him trip over a word or something like that. I thought that person hated my writing. Actually, he did hate my writing. And I went to him and said, I don't want to be a bad writer. So I want you to tell me when I'm doing something wrong. And he actually took out a red pen and said, okay, you're on. And for maybe a month or so, he would correct and criticize my copy and be really brutal about it. Until one day I said, what's wrong with this one? And he said, you spell police wrong. And I said, okay. Did that trip you up? And he goes, oh, no, I knew what you meant. And I said, okay, what else? And he said, nothing. I think we can stop this. And he became a great teacher and a great friend.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart, shining the withering light of truth with a guy who has 1 foot out the door, Craig Delamore, who is retiring after 42 years with the radio station. And we're just learning more about your host and moderator, lo, these many years. And we take you up to WCBS in New York. It's 1977. This is the summer of Sam. This is the summer of the blackout. I mean, they've made movies about this.
Yes.
And what was your experience following these stories as a brand new journalist in radio?
Well, because I was a writer with very few exceptions, in fact, with only one exception, really, and that was when Nelson Rockefeller, the former vice president, and died in the middle of the night, and no one else could go to his townhouse nearby. So that was the one time I went on the air. For that station.
And of course, the death of former Vice President Nelson Rockefeller, there are some questions about the circumstances to this very day.
Yes, and something was apparent that night, but you know, you only report what you know. So we just knew that it was strange, the timing. But anyway, so it was exciting to be in that, to be part of it. But I wasn't the big part of it. I was facilitating things getting on the air. I was the writer. I was taking in reports.
And the next job was the Associated Press in Washington.
Yes. And I actually moved to Washington because of my now wife, because she went to school at Georgetown Law School and was going to be there for, you know, three years. I thought, well, you know, if we're going to get married, I should go down there and support her and try and get a job. And I did. And I tried to get a job with CBS, could not. But the people at CBS, who also stayed in contact with me, knew someone at AP Radio and suggested that maybe they want to look at me. And they did, and they hired me.
And what was the difference going from local journalism in New York, all news radio serving a big metropolitan area, to a wire service and to a network.
It was really, it felt the same because you're using different skills. I was, again, in this case, I was an editor and a writer until I started doing on-air work. So it was just learning in a different classroom. And it was, a lot of us were young. We had our editor was Mark Noller, who became one of the lead CBS radio correspondents at the White House. We had a lot of people who went elsewhere. When CNN started up during that time, they stole a bunch of people from AP Radio to be on their air. So it was a classroom. But
you don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It was great. I mean, we lived through any number of stories nationally. Even I had contact with people in Chicago because we would take in stories from people who would be our correspondents in other cities.
And covering, it was a time of change in Washington, obviously, the conservative revolution, Ronald Reagan coming in, and just a very different mode of operation in Washington, and also just a very different Congress compared to the way it is today. And what was it like encountering some of these personalities and just the various forces that were shaping the town?
Well, remembering that I was just a kid, it was, you know, a real thrill to be standing next to some star journalists. You know, I would be the person who, if I was working on the weekend and the president was coming back to the White House, you don't send your top reporter. Well, first off, you don't have your top reporter on the weekend. You send one of your reporters just to stand on the lawn as the helicopter comes in. But you're standing next to Sam Donaldson, and you know, just other luminaries. So it was fun. But like I said, I've always looked at this as learning something every day. That's how I approached my work. And so as long as I could learn something new every day, I was feeling like I could grow in this business.
It's 1983. I would imagine you probably still kept up your contacts with CBS Radio or CBS News. And clearly they must have found a place for you at their all-new station in Chicago. And What were the circumstances that brought you to WBBM News Radio 78?
Well, let me say this story as quickly as possible, but it was a prison break or a prison riot at the Sing Sing prison in upstate New York. And Warren Levinson was our correspondent in New York City who was working that story, went up there. And at some point, we wondered how long he could keep going because he was just reporting every hour. And our boss decided not to find out. He still saw that I had 2 days off coming up so I wouldn't mess up the schedule. And he said, hop a plane to New York, get a car, get a hotel room, go to Sing Sing, tell Warren to go get some sleep, and you take over until he wakes up. And that's how it starts. And Joe Durso, who was the news director here at WBBM, was listening to our coverage. And when I got, and I thought we did a pretty good job together. Warren and I worked well together. When I got home, there was a call from Joe Durso, who was the person who told me about AP Radio in Washington, that he was now not in Washington, but here and running WBBM, and said, "Hey, would you like to come out and talk about a job in Chicago?" And I had visited Chicago while covering a campaign of John Anderson and spent some time here and thought, yeah, it's a pretty good city. And I guess we all hit it off.
Now, you became the political editor in 2001.
Yes.
And you replaced Bob Crawford. And the political editor at this radio station, John Madigan, Bob Crawford, you knew you had some big shoes to fill.
Yes. But I was confident. This was the one time I went into a really big new job where I was confident, but that was because Bob Crawford literally made sure that I was the only choice to replace him. We worked on a number of conventions together and got to know each other well. And I was the suburban bureau chief for years. And that meant that I got to know a lot of the Republican politicians better than he did. And so when he went on vacation, he would say, "Why don't you take over At Issue for me, fill in, and then you can bring some of the people you know onto the air." And that was how we did things for many years. And he really made sure that I knew when he was getting ready to retire and thought about it and said, "You know, I hope you get it." In fact, the day he retired, he said, he called me and said, "I'm going to walk in and hand them my letter of resignation at 10 o'clock this morning." And he says, "So around 10:30, 11, why don't you call them?" And at 10:30, somebody called me and offered me the job.
And so you come in here and politics today has changed a great deal in 25 years. And we think about being the political editor, it means you inherit this desk at City Hall and the decades old pile of paper that is accumulating on that desk at City Hall. But there are more responsibilities. I mean, George Ryan's the governor of the state of Illinois. Richard M. Daley's the mayor of Chicago. George W. Bush has been elected president of the United States. Coalitions are shifting in the state of Illinois. Suburban Chicago is becoming a lot more Democratic, downstate becoming a lot more Republican. And here you are, and you have to make sense of it all. And what were some of the big issues that you were dealing with when you got this job?
I think, one, I still had to pay attention to the suburbs to some degree, and Richard Daley was also starting to pay attention to them. So that's when the alliance of suburban and Chicago, suburban mayors in Chicago was forged. But it was also racial politics. You were just coming off, Harold Washington died. I'm forgetting names. That's my affliction of forgetting names of people I know very well. But then you had Mayor Daley coming in and really trying to forge coalition politics. But he also had what was called a rubber stamp city council. So it was fairly easy for him to get things done, but it wasn't as much a rubber stamp as it was just knowing when to make changes. He would propose something, and in a committee, aldermen would oppose it, and he would hear their complaints and make a change so that by the time the ordinance came back, it was different. Well, by then, the alders were almost always going to vote for it. So it seemed like he had it, you know, locked from the beginning, but he didn't always.
There are still remnants of the old Chicago machine, but it's definitely as broken down compared to the way it used to be. And even though it had its many, many problems, it was It was an organizing principle. It got a lot of different stakeholders with a lot of different beliefs and from a lot of different walks of life to all pull on the rope in the same direction. And Mayor Daley, Richard M. Daley, was, as you point out, very good at trying to get consensus inside of that framework.
Indeed, he was. But you also started getting the kind of factions that you do have now. Yes, there was the Black Caucus, and there was although that grew out of Harold Washington and the Latino Caucus. But you also had the Old Guard. Then you had the Progressive Caucus, and it's kind of funny that you would have some people who would be the progressives now and are the more conservative alders now in these days, but. That was how it was starting. And so you were getting some dissension, if not resistance. But those coalitions eventually got stronger until today, especially when you get REMAP, where the council has to redraw its lines. Those are the times when the philosophical and racial differences are the biggest, are the most contentious. And you never see the council argue as hard as it does during REMAP.
Now, what was it about Mayor Daley, the second one, that allowed him to have such success with the city council? Was it his ability to be this consensus builder, the fact that he could listen to people and pivot and listen to suggestions? Or was he just had the political muscle and he didn't want to get in his bad side?
I'm going to say both, because that was his strength. Was that he could be the boss when you needed the boss, when he needed to be the boss, but he could also go into communities and, you know, he could go to the South Side and go to a South Side church and talk about issues that people wanted. Then he could go to the Southwest Side and talk about, you know, what's going on with Midway Airport and the noise there. He was flexible in that way. The thing that challenged him and brought him down was when the scandals where people who were getting the contracts and, you know, where the money was, those things started erupting under him. And I think that's where his joy with the job started to fade a bit.
I'm going to close with the first time I met you. I was working down the dial. Yeah, I was down the dial. And we were next to each other in the radio area in the tent at Grant Park, November 2008, and for the Obama election night. And for me, I got to make the announcement on the radio station where I worked. And I still call that my man on the moon moment. Obviously, history will judge, history and historians will judge the presidency of Barack Obama. But to be in Grant Park in that moment, watching him break that barrier, that was easily the most amazing moment of my life. What was it like one table over for you?
It was an equally amazing moment, but it was the end of a series of moments, because I knew Barack Obama as a state senator. In fact, a Republican state senator who's now the head of the RTA, Kirk Dillard, told me I should meet this guy, this new senator, who said, you really, he's like the smartest guy I've ever met. He's really something. You should meet him. And I did. Through the campaign and everything else, through the convention, where I saw people crying as he was nominated to be the Democratic candidate for president, those moments all come together for me. And then to be sitting there, sitting next to Tammy Duckworth, who I was interviewing about the campaign when I heard in my ear, we're going to do a bulletin. And I said, okay.
They called Ohio, because the yes. ABC News came over to me and said, we're about to call Ohio. And that was the ballgame back
right
then.
And they said the same thing to me. So they said, you know, finish up. We'll come back to you. But and then they did the announcement. And And then, and she had on headphones too. So when we came back after Chris Kreidel and I forgot who else was on the air.
David Rowe,
mm-hmm. Of course. He's officially going to be president of the United States. Da, da, and even the crowd started cheering, and to come back and to be able to then react to it and to get Tammy Duckworth to talk about what it meant to her. That what a political year that was.
Here's something, a political figure from your own front yard or backyard, and now he's this global figure above and beyond anyone else you've ever seen.
Even to this day, I mean, I will tell anyone who asks, that was the biggest political story that I've covered in my life, because I saw it at the beginning and, you know, got to be there and you know, every major step along the way.
I will end with the question that I always leave everyone with. Is there anything I missed? What would you like to add?
You know, I think I've done so much and been blessed to cover so much. I don't think I'd change a thing.
And we'll have to leave it there. On behalf of myself, the staff of WBBM, and the audience, thank you, Craig, for your decades of service, and enjoy life without alarm clocks. If you want to listen to this program again, you can do so on demand at WBBMNewsRadio.com or the Odyssey app. And for At Issue, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.